go ahead with this meeting, please? We now have before us a rather thick package and a very lengthy agenda, and that this is to be followed by a special board meeting and an executive session. So let's get rolling on this. Are there any additions, changes to the agenda that we've just been handed? If not, the agenda is approved without objection. Are there any corrections to the minutes of December 4th?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Could you turn on the lights again?
The lights over here.
Lost the light.
One light went out. I don't think they can do it.
Okay, never mind.
All right.
I'm called, but I can't reach them.
Are there any changes to the minutes of December 4th? If not, those minutes are approved without objection, which brings us to the information items, the first of which is presentation on our fiscal 10 budget. This is the beginning of the process for our fiscal 10 budget, and Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if we're having some technical difficulties. Oh, we're here. Good morning again. I'm going to present to you an overview of the 2010 budget proposal. Again, prepared is up to 1:30 last night by the Metro staff. Again, this is a snapshot in time of where we are today, and some of the numbers and recommendations would change.
It's behind the blue sheet.
I'm sorry. It's in the back behind the blue sheet. The bulk of the presentation will deal with the FY 2010 operating budget of $1.3 billion, and I will provide information on projected revenues, expenses, and subsidies. The second part will deal with the Metro Matters for capital budget projected to be $400 million. As you are aware, FY 10 is the last year of Metro Matters capital funding, and at a time that we have a greater need for capital, the expenditures for FY 10 have dropped one-third of the budget that we had in FY 09. And while we're looking forward to some economic stimulus package, it just highlights the importance, again, of seeking and developing new capital funding sources to keep the system in a state of good repair. Next slide, please. I think it's no surprise to anyone that it's the overall economic news is not good, not in this nation, not in this region, and not for Metro. Let me stress for members of the audience, this is a balanced budget proposal, and it's based upon certain assumptions. One is we recognize the economic conditions facing the customers and the local jurisdictions. There are no fare increases in this proposal. No increase in total local government subsidies. My discussions with various jurisdictions have been that as of this moment, there will be even some difficulties of providing the same amount of dollars that we received for FY 09. And the proposed budget has significant staffing and cost reductions that are being proposed, and that there are significant service reductions proposed at some point is in order to close the gap. In addition to that, there are significant increases to the Metro access budget due to increased ridership. From a standpoint of budget, the challenge being from a national perspective is indicated here on the board in Atlanta. There are going to be major service reductions, St. Louis 25% service reductions, a layoff of 25 employees throughout the country on the East Coast, West Coast, central part of the country. Transit agencies are confronted with the same issue. At a time that we're experiencing significant growth in ridership, we're confronted with the situation of reducing our services. From the jurisdictional perspective, every jurisdiction in this region has said that the revenues coming in will fall far below what the revenues were in past years, which would impact their abilities to provide their basic services and make contributions to the Metro system. Now that the stage is set, let me talk about the numbers. We're facing a budget gap of $176 million or 13% of the proposed budget if we would have assumed we would operate at the same level of services and same and have the same expenditures. While we're seeing significant ridership growth, we are having some offsets in revenue declines. One is because we no longer have the reserve that we had last year for the fare increase, and there are no one-time sources of funds. We do have a large amount of the increase. We do have labor costs that are going up $44 million or 6%, and those are not, let me be clear on this issue, those are not pay increases. Under our agreement, based upon longevity and certain positions, particularly operators, mechanics, and others, as you go from year to year, you move from 80%, for an example, to 85% to 90% of the base rate. And that those take place regardless of what we decide to do as far as pay increases are concerned. From an energy standpoint, we show a $13 million increase and a huge increase in the pensions. We, like everyone else, have suffered significant losses in the market. And again, this is a snapshot in time, and that number might increase of $44 million. The Metro Access Services has the largest percent increase in costs of $17 million. And I will recommend, again, some actions just to look at everything that we have here. I am proposing actions to close the gap, $103 million in administrative and operational staffing, as well as cost reduction, and I would get to the number of employees by categories, and up to a $73 million reduction in bus, rail, and paratransit services. Next page, please. Again, the assumptions are no fare increases, that ridership will continue to grow at the current level, and that the full year of the balance transfers and the elimination paper transfers have been taken into account. Now, we will update this information as we get additional data and have experience, but right now we've rolled in additional revenues as a result of the elimination of public paper transfers. We're considering the economic downturn impact on non-passenger revenues, such as rent, fiber optic cables, and others, and again, the one-time source that is no longer available to the agency. Next slide. As of November, the Metro Rail ridership was growing at 3%, which was 1% above our projections. For Metro Bus, the growth was also 3%, which was 2% above our projections. For Metro Access, the ridership has grown 20%, which is 5% above the projections, and we have assumed that these rates will continue through FY 2010. The projected increases and the number of riders with changes in the fare policy accounts for the increase in Metro Rail revenues. For FY09, we estimate that the revenues will be 504. That was the budget number. And for FY10, we estimate that the revenues will be $525.9 million. Again, one of the changes, if you look at the detail, and we can go into detail if you wish to, on the fare policy adjustments, there is a $13.6 million change, and that's because several years ago, as a matter of bookkeeping for transfers from rail to bus, we just had a balance sheet or an accounting adjustment of $13.6 million of revenues that were transferred to bus from rail. But well, that's not going to occur anymore because of the balance transfers, and so the number seems lower here, but for the agency, the amount of dollars is still increasing. Next page. Ridership growth, again, is generating some additional revenues. It's something that's changed in the slide, the prior one. Thank you. The budget revenues, again, for FY09 are $111 million, and we project the revenues next year to be the same based upon changes overall from, you know, services and other actions that we're taking. Next page. If you skip this one and go to the next page, please. Other revenue changes. Parking fare revenues is currently under budget, and not anticipated to increase in 2010, and that's just slightly over $1 million. Parking meter revenues are down, and we do not expect for those to increase because we're finding that ridership is increasing at the outlying stations, but people are apparently finding other ways to get to those lots using public transit or carpooling to get there. Non-passenger revenue accounts are also adversely affected by the economy. We're getting a decline in fiber optic revenues as well as you would imagine, from interest income and property rental income. Slide. This slide, again, is a summary of revenues that we anticipate for FY 2010. And I'd like to point out that this will be the last year of our guaranteed advertising revenues, so you might see some changes next year. Now, we are increasing revenues from our services, but the reason that the revenues are down again is because we do not have the 36.2%, $36.2 million in set aside for fare increases. So overall, the services are generating more. We just do not have the one-time revenue source. From an expense, forecast, and again, this is just a snapshot in time. Some of this will change as we go through the process over the next few months and refine these numbers. So this is where we were as of 1:30 last night. A 6% increase in payroll expenses, but 83% of it is really geared towards step increases that are not pay increases in the basic salary of employees. It's step increases that were contractually agreed to with our bargaining units, all of them. It's a 1.5% increase that we show for pay increases for FY10. From a pension standpoint, That again is a significant increase, a 91% increase in what we're projected to pay for pension this year based upon what's happened in the markets. Again, from a paratransit cost, there's a 27% increase in paratransit, and an energy cost, a 12%. Now, some people might ask, from an energy standpoint, isn't the cost of diesel fuel declining? Well, it's going back and forth. The real issue here is the energy cost of electricity for the rail system, and there have been significant increases in our costs for electricity. An expense overview. I have implemented, beginning back in earlier this year, management controls to reduce expenditures for FY09. We're currently forecast to come in $9 million under budget by June 30th, and these management steps that we're taking is to freeze all non-critical positions. We eliminated 80 vacant positions that were over 180 days old, and these were some positions that were needed, but we had difficulty recruiting them, but we had to stop the expenditures, and we cut those out of the budget. We also implemented a 10% reduction and discretionary accounts, such as total 10% of costs, travel, materials, supplies, and consulting services in all departments. I looked at it from the perspective that service reductions were going to be held as the last resort to achieve no increases in jurisdictional funding from FY 2009 to 2010. But in developing the budget, I use the criteria that there would be no reductions in safety and security-related areas. Number two, that there would be a 10% across-the-board cut in all departments, including personnel and other expenditures in the administrative areas. And from the standpoint of services, to minimize the impact on service reductions. The budget reductions, as the numbers work out today, would require the elimination of 891 positions, or 8% of the workforce. $176 million net expense reductions would be $103 million reductions in administrative and some operational expenses, including personnel. $73 million are reductions, some cut in our services. And that is complied, I mean, that's including $87 million in service reductions and $14 million less revenues. Again, where you get less revenues when you reduce services. And to give you some indications of the breakdown of the administrative reductions, there are 313 positions we're calling non-active service positions. 74 are general administrative positions. 69 are managerial positions, 42 are professional positions, and 128 others. And of these positions, of the managerial and administrative, approximately 80% of those positions are currently filled. On the other positions of services, approximately 34% are filled. The staffing levels, if we carry through with these numbers, would reduce Ramada staffing to the level of 2005. That is the magnitude of the reductions based upon the dollars that we have today. The policy issues that I'm asking from the board as we go through this process is to, and we will ask the industry to do a peer review to ensure that the Metro Access services is in complete compliance with the ADA law. Here we do go beyond the law itself, but again, the increases are so significant that we need to review that and bring back recommendations to the board, and we will have a peer review to ensure that we're meeting the regulations, which I am confident that we are, but I want to bring back a review by others in the industry. On the service reductions, instead of me listing a list of services that will be reduced because it works out to be 7%. I ask that the board direct the JCC or the jurisdictional committees to work with us. And by the January 29th meeting, from a jurisdictional perspective, to look at services throughout the region and make recommendations on what services we will discuss for reduction. Again, in the budget, from a policy standpoint, we are assuming that we're not using the $13 million in reserves which were generated in FY09, nor are we using the projected cost efficiencies that we project to have in FY09 of $9 million. So there's $22 million that we're not putting into we're not taking into account and looking at revenues. We've set those aside because those are board policy issues. In addition, from a funding standpoint, we do have $5 million in the budget to fund the liability for retiree health insurance. Again, I brought that up in past years, and it's a board policy decision. Again, whether or not we want to move forward in making that expenditure. Again, just from a recap standpoint and from a jurisdictional standpoint, the projection that we're bringing this budget shows no increases in subsidies from our jurisdictional partners. And I just want to make that clear. From the aspect of developing this budget, it is a zero increase in those revenues. We just look at revenues from fares and other areas, but no fare increase. Again, what the changes would have been with the increases had we not made without any service reductions or expenditure reductions, we would have had a $52 million increase in Metro Rail from a subsidy standpoint, $4 million for Metro Bus, and $17 million for Metro Access. And again, we're asking the region to work together in partnership to recommend what reductions do we make to offset those expense increases, but do not have revenues to backfill them. Again, I'd like to briefly go through the capital part of the budget.
Could we just stop here?
Yes.
And let's talk about operating before we move on to capital.
Yes, this is the biggest, that's the biggest.
People might have some questions.
Biggest.
Let me just get a clarification. What you were saying is you would like us to come back on the 29th of February, of January, and make these policy decisions? Is that
no.
right?
No. What I'm asking is that we, the jurisdictional committees work with us to look at services throughout the region and look from a regional perspective on recommendations on what service reductions are required from a regional look to work with us, so it's not just Metro staff recommending any direction. I think the jurisdictions themselves want a lot of input in this issue.
Certainly the jurisdictions are going to want a significant amount of input, but there's another part to that, and that is that, of course, before we do $84 million worth of service reductions, we're going to want to look pretty carefully at the overall budget.
Absolutely.
See whether there are other places where we feel perhaps there might be adjustments that could deal with that. And to the degree that, for instance, you mentioned $9 million that you're projecting by the end of the fiscal year that would be savings, we may individually as jurisdictions say, well, I want to apply part of that savings to the services that are in my jurisdiction. So those start to get really complicated. So let me just suggest two things. One is, are we talking, just so that everybody understands this, that at the end of January, assuming that everybody could really come up with a list that would total $84 million, that we would start a hearing process relative to those reductions? Because if not, we're going to want to take a look at an awful lot of expense information now and then.
Actually, I listed January 29th and asked that you reconvene the Finance Committee. This is the first step of multiple steps we have to take. This is just the first look. On the 29th of January, I'm asking that we look at recommendations on any possible service reductions, because there's a lot of policy issues that have to be decided before you ever get to that point. And beginning in February, that we have a series of budget meetings, including the scheduled meetings, to go over details of expenses and revenues to make adjustments. And I am absolutely sure there will be adjustments in those categories. So by the time we reach March, we can make a decision, and from a timeline standpoint, is to again conduct public hearings. It does not mean we will reduce the service, but you need to have public input should you make some decision to reduce service. During the month of March, we will continue to go through revenue projections and expense projections and begin to fine-tune the budget more. In April, we meet on several occasions again to fine-tune the budget, but then we need to start making some decisions in May. So really, May will be the date that we will make, I would think, significant decisions on the budget. There'll be many decisions made, but May is the time that the budget will take on a look that will finalize the budget. And then in June, we'll bring back the budget for final approval. So there's a lot of work. Again, this is a snapshot in time. These numbers will change. Every change that we make in categories, as we've agreed to, we will show you what the original numbers were, what the changes are, and why those numbers change up or down, and what the reasons for those, so that the board and the public can follow every step that we're making in this process.
I appreciate your comment. I'm going to go around and make sure that everybody gets a chance to comment on this. Your comments there, it wasn't entirely clear to me exactly when we would have to be at the point that this board would authorize public hearings on service changes.
And page 24 actually is the calendar, if we want to just go to that.
Yeah. Page 24, again, that's, I'm having a hard time seeing it from up there. Let me look at my sheet. In January, again, we're just talking this discussion and overview of where we are. The ridership and revenue updates we will provide. again on the 29th, because all of this will change some between now and then, and we're requesting the JCC recommendations on service cuts. I understand that those dates might shift, but we had to set a calendar up. In February, consider specific recommendations. The board has to take an action item in February to begin the process of public hearings. Understand, whatever goes to a public hearing does not necessarily mean it will be cut, but we have to start a process in March in order to, by the time we reach June, that we can implement any changes, if any, that are determined through the budget process.
Okay, well then let me just submit for at least my view, and I suspect the view of other board members, is that we're now looking at basically all of our operating expense reduction discussions and discussions on operating costs and on revenues being done on January 29th, where we have one other committee meeting and a board meeting, which means we will have like an hour to look at the entire expense picture of this authority before moving ahead with an issue of service reductions. And I don't think that's going to work. So we're going to have to figure out offline, not in this meeting right now, how we're going to really take a look at all of these issues so that we really know what we're going to do and when.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
I'm not sure I understand. Your understanding is how that is they want those decisions made at the end of the term?
No, what I'm saying is, if you look at this sequence, there's only one place that I see that says we're going to really look at the operating costs and the revenues. Right? By the time we get to February, we're already going to service reductions, and by March, we're going to the capital budget. I think we're probably going to want to take a look at those operating cost issues in much more detail before we make decisions.
You're suggesting, Mr. Chairman, that we're going to need additional meetings of this committee?
Or a change in this sequence.
Right. I don't know that changing it is an option, but it's got to be
done. And that's why I think we need to discuss it more.
We have had extra budget meetings. Harder year to ask, always been harder. So I just assume we're going to put more meetings.
Okay, and I think that's, before I say that, I'd like to make sure we all have a chance to talk about it.
Otherwise, going to have a meeting.
Okay, why don't we just go around the room and do it? And one of the other things I think we all need to comment on very, very succinctly is, do we want the JCC to be involved in this process? I think probably the answer is yes, but to what degree and who's making recommendations on service changes? Starting with Mr. Yule.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me also thank Mr. Cato and his staff for acknowledging and certainly supporting local jurisdictions and the fact that there will be no increase in subsidies, because we're gravely being impacted financially, and whether it was a penny or a nickel that you needed, it's just not going to be there, unfortunately, for the system. So that's a very positive comment, and hopefully we can, in the finality of when we get to the point of adopting the budget, nothing will change there along those lines unless windfall comes from the federal government that helps us all. But a couple of questions. On page 14, the pension line item for expenses, 2009 approved budget $48 million, 2010 baseline forecast $93 million, increase of $44 million. Is that, explain that again, is that a result of depreciation or reduction in pension values because of the investments, or is that an increase cost to pensions?
It's the former, actually. As a result, and everyone has experienced this on their pension liabilities, because their losses have been significant. This number that we have here is actually a placeholder based upon our actuaries that have provided us with information as of the last few months. We actually anticipate our actuaries giving us another view of that this spring. And as a result of that, we're trying to plan for the worst-case scenario, which is why you see another $22 million on the other line, which is really just a placeholder after we finally get scrubbing more of our expenses, because we're anticipating we might have even further losses on those pensions. It might not be, but that's what we're trying to say.
And I appreciate your answer. The follow-on question, is this something that has to be paid in lump sum and factored into the annual budget, 2010 budget, or can it be spread out over several years?
I think it's a question of that we are actually handling in our collective bargaining agreement for this spring to see if we could anticipate possibly smoothing or amortizing the loss over a longer period of time and smoothing that over the years. And that is still a question mark that needs to be answered, but we are positioning ourselves with that.
So it's the worst case scenario.
Yes.
All right, and my final question.
Mr. Yule, may I interrupt for just a moment? One of the things I just wanted to point out is this is the kind of issue that I think we need to look in more detail, and this particular one, probably one that we should be doing in executive session.
Okay. Final question. Mr. Cato, you mentioned on page 16, FY 2010 budget reduction development, and item 2, 10% cut across all departments. Is that the right way or the best way to approach making cost reductions? I mean, to just say 10% to all departments as opposed to, don't know how many departments we have, but really looking at them individually and whether it's a range of 1% to whatever, as opposed to just everybody's got to suffer 10. I mean, for instance, in my jurisdiction, we're looking at cost across all departments, but it's not a flat 10%. It's one department may have a 1%, somebody may have a 20%, somebody else may have 5%. To get to the bottom line.
Right. And I apologize. That is a general statement. For an example, in the area of safety, there is no reduction. And in security, there's only reductions if it relates to any service changes. So it says 10% across. It was really, that was the target I was hitting, but it was individually discussed with individual departments, and in some cases, it could be slightly more.
Okay, thank you.
Before we move on to Mr. Albert, I'd just like to point out the statement that you made, if I heard it correctly, was that there is no total increase in subsidies. That does not say that any individual jurisdiction might not see an increase in subsidies.
Yes, it's depending upon how the formula works out, the formula process. One example, on the one expense, the paratransit expense, there is a disproportionate assignment to one jurisdiction on that. And so by the total subsidy one increase, the individual jurisdiction will have some increases. And so we're taking basically the dollar amount for all jurisdictions will remain the same.
And let me note that probably one of the important things for us to do very early is to start to get the best possible projections of those, because as you point out, that would be a hit to Maryland almost certainly, and how much more we would have to pay and what we can really afford would be a significant issue. If we can't afford it, we then have to look at what changes can be made in this budget that either would be Maryland specific or might be for everybody that moves everybody's budget down. And so although Mr. Yule expressed support for the general theory, if he suddenly saw a 10% increase in his own and it was balanced by somebody else going down by 10%, that may not be an appropriate subsidy change.
Absolutely. I understand that.
Mr. Albert.
Mr. Cato, I think what struck me about your presentation is that not that the largest expenses, personnel expense, but 83% of that, that was a number, is in contracts you have with the bargaining units. So what efforts are you, not just you personally, but the staff undertaking to bring that number down? And I raise that issue because I think all jurisdictions are probably facing similar budget pressures. In the District of Columbia, we are. And one of the things that we're doing is going back to the bargaining table, presenting the real realities, financial realities to our bargaining and units, and hoping that we'll be able to, one, get some efficiencies, and two, get some savings as a result of those negotiations. So I was wondering what Omaha Metro is doing in that area.
Well, in fairness to the bargaining units, the first time they knew about this was last night when I met with them and briefed them on the budgets that would be presented here. First, we will have discussions. But the first piece is, I just want to be clear, the 83% is prior contractual agreements. This is not new contractual agreements. But having said that, we will have those discussions. But the bargaining unit became aware of these numbers last night.
But do you, and I know you haven't had those discussions, but do you have a general sense as to the areas of savings that you could achieve in those conversations with the bargaining unit?
I think that is something, if we did have that discussion, it would be in closed session. But in fairness, I can't project that without discussions.
One follow-up question, Mr. Chair. One of your major assumptions is that there would be no fare increases, correct?
Yes.
Are you examining other revenue enhancement opportunities? You talked about in your presentation about no growth in non-traditional revenue areas. Are there any other potential revenue enhancement areas that you haven't discussed with us that you might be thinking of?
There are some we're looking at, I mean, from a joint development standpoint, as well as rental. I mean, there's one you mentioned, I'm aware of from you yesterday, that we will look into. But is there a significant area of significant revenue increases? And the answer is no. There could be some, you know, few dollars here, a few thousand there, but it's not anything significant enough to shift the direction of the budget.
Do you sell a building, for example?
Mr. Zimmerman, do you have some questions?
Did you stop before you were getting to the pages on the capital budget?
Yes.
Yes, I was asked to stop.
Yeah, we're going to do operating, then we'll do capital.
I'm going to pass.
Okay, Ms. Hewlett?
Yes. Thank you. I have a couple of questions. One of which Peter Benjamin addressed already in terms of the total jurisdictional amount. The sooner you can get us what that means for Maryland and Prince George's and Montgomery counties, and particular, that would be helpful.
Okay.
You have a feeling that it's going to make a difference. And then the other thing I wanted to go back to, the second thing was the jurisdictional coordinating committee. Yes, Mr. Benjamin asked that question. I think it's imperative that we actually discuss this with the jurisdictional coordinating committee. And I know Prince George's County will be working and with DPWT, and of course we're working with the state to see what service, what cuts make sense. And then thirdly, I'd like to know about the bringing Metro Access into compliance with the ADA law again. I think you're talking about just that would be a service cut if we stayed within that radius as prescribed by the ADA?
Yes. So, you know, we have a very good service, and over time we've made adjustments to it. And the ADA requires that you operate within 3/4 of a mile of a rail or bus line, and you have the same hours of operations. We are slightly over that. I mean, we do some less than, or greater than 3/4 of a mile and a few hours of operations. But there are a whole bunch of policy implications there to look at.
That's what I wanted to address, because I think I would hope so much of what we do is so very important. But we have been in, we have already set a precedent for going beyond that 3/4 of a mile. And I don't know what the cost savings would be. I imagine it's not terribly great. So I'm putting my 2 cents worth out front, which, unless I hear something to make this worthwhile, that I don't think from a policy standpoint that would make a whole lot of sense to change that when the benefit is not that great. So I don't know what that amount is, but if you can tell us that would be good. But I don't see why we could change that. I think it makes more sense to continue doing providing the service that we have been providing thus far. And I think that might be it for the moment.
Okay, Mr. Lynn?
I may be going in the opposite direction of what was just stated, in light of the fact that we all are suffering in very difficult times. And one of the areas where our growth and cost has been the most is in the area of access. And for as long as I've been on this board, no one has ever decided that was an area that needed to be addressed. But we all know economy is such that we may have to cut services everywhere else. I can't see why we now decide that we're going to create an untouched situation, particularly when we exceed what is required. We're all having to make tough decisions here. And I know I'm making some lifestyle changes and decisions as well. It's some things that we may have to do. I don't want to start taking things off the table yet before we in fact see what our options are. One of the questions I had going forth is that we talked about a baseline that made an assumption that there will be no increases in jurisdictional support. And is that based upon some commitments from the jurisdictions that there will be a continuation of what's been provided in the existing budget? That's a question that I'm asking in light of what I've seen in many jurisdictions where they're taking drastic cuts in their own transportation budgets. And I know Maryland is, to be very specific. So I was wondering whether or not there's some sense that has been assured.
Now, this is my optimistic picture.
Okay.
I've had verbal discussions. I have been assured from some jurisdictions you will not get any more. That assurance I've received. From other jurisdictions, they're still working on their budgets, and I just chose that area. And I'm being optimistic there.
And one of the reasons I noticed that you had some quotes from some of the other places around the country, since I just work around the country, I've kind of followed some of that. And there have been some situations where the economic forecasting exactly had a much more severe outcome than had been predicted, and some of those transit agencies took some fairly drastic cuts in November, December, and they wake up in January and found out they're now going to have to make some additional cuts as well. This is a time when the normal economic forecasting, because of all the variables, is getting very difficult to predict what's going to occur. I thought we also had, there was some money within this budget that was kind of reserved.
Yes, it's the $13 million in reserve in the 2009 budget, which carried over from 2008. The 2008 is a reserve. And then we anticipate that the 2009 budget will come in approximately $9 million under budget. But we did not use those funds, show that as a one-time revenue source.
Some of the unpredictability that's going to occur right now, and if we want to try to moderate some of the service impacts that we will have and not have to drastically make reductions and then come back and make additional ones, some of that will allow us to maintain our ability to try to control that to some degree, particularly since we have all these other variables that are outside our control, including what's happening in other jurisdictional budgets. So that's something that I would like to see as transparent.
Mr. Lynn, what I thought I heard you say was preserving the reserve is an important thing to do. Is that right?
Yes.
Are we finished? Sections?
I wanted to have a clarity on the reductions of services with regard to the Metro Access. You are asking for the peer review. And are you saying that the cuts you have already proposed take in Metro Access adjustments?
No.
So for we may find that this number grows as we look at what we may choose to do.
If you make some decisions, there could be some reductions in costs and access services, but. Unless there is a projection of ridership far greater than what we anticipate,
okay.
The number shouldn't grow.
Okay, because you're talking about the $73 million reductions, and you say bus and train,
yes.
And we're going to add Metro Access to that, or you're going to make a decision based upon that peer review.
Based upon the peer review, it's already added in. The only thing the peer review might do and policy change might do, and I don't know the number, it might show some reductions. in expenditures versus increase in expenditure. Our assumption is a full funding of Metro Access.
Okay, we need to hear that. And I guess the other one was regarding where Mr. Benjamin was in terms of what the subsidy reductions are, and can we have a breakdown jurisdictionally? And I think that's going to be very important for us to look at it on our own.
We do have that.
Hutchins, I would note that the $73 million is a net number. We actually have to cut $84 million to end up with their 73. So that's a pretty daunting challenge and is really contrary to everything we've ever done in this organization. Mr. Graham.
I too am concerned about the service reductions in the process. I definitely support the notion that the jurisdictions should come up with recommendations regarding service reductions. I am concerned that, I agree with Mr. Benjamin, that we want to be sure that before we really make any consideration of those, though, that we have looked at the expenses of the authority. Mm-hmm. And looking at the schedule here, I too wonder just how that concern is going to be accommodated. How do you see, but first, how do you see the JCC recommendations working? I thought we were going to be instead looking to the individual jurisdictions to come up with the suggested service reductions for that jurisdiction. Do you see this actually going before the committee, though, itself?
Yes. Bring it back to this.
No, the JCC.
Well, the JCC are representatives of the jurisdictions.
Well, when you say JCC, I'm just trying to understand the process. I'm not challenging it. But do you see this set of recommendations coming to us through the JCC, or do you see a set of recommendations coming to us from the individual jurisdictions?
The detail of the process.
With a meaning.
I don't know if I worked up mentally.
The JCC is an entity that meets. It's a committee. And so what I'm wondering is this recommendation coming from the JCC, or is it coming, in our case, from the D.C. Department of Transportation, the Mayor's Fenty's administration?
Go ahead.
I'm assuming that they're representing the District of Columbia and the Department of Transportation, the mayor and the council.
But I think what I'm anticipating here is that this is going to be a very difficult process. In the time that I've been on this board, there has never been, in my recollection, anything on the magnitude of this type of service cut. Assuming that there will be substantial service cuts, just for the sake of this point, how we determine where to cut in terms of services is going to be something that is going to be very difficult, I think, to work out within the various jurisdictions. And the first manifestation of this tension could be at the JCC, is what I'm saying. Not the last manifestation, the first manifestation of it. And what I would prefer to see is each of the funding jurisdictions would provide their suggestions for service cuts. And not think that this could be processed by a regional panel.
Mr. Graham, if I may, one of the issues that we're going to have to deal with is who has to cut how much before we come up with suggestions. And that may be something that the staff and the JCC want to recommend, but I think you're right that the point is, one, we have to figure out who's going to cut how much, and when we get to what we might actually cut, that's got to go beyond the JCC. That's got to be something that is being done by the individual jurisdictions and then comes back to this board for consideration.
Directly from the individual jurisdictions.
I don't care whether it flows through or not, they certainly have to be heavily involved, and the JCC can't make that decision.
That's the point. Right. And I think that also this pain has got to be proportionately distributed.
Understood.
And so we can't have a situation where one jurisdiction or a couple of jurisdictions are sustaining, a disproportionate amount of these reductions. So I know ultimately we're going to do this, but how this all is presented to us is a concern. The second thing is that, taking up on Mr. Benjamin's point, is that I think it's important the sequence of all of this. In other words, ought we to be assuring ourselves that we have made all the possible cuts that we're going to make in terms of the operations before we turn to service reduction. In other words, ought that not to be a last resort after we're all absolutely satisfied that the operation itself, the operations themselves are as lean as possible?
And yes, and that's the direction I'm taking, but given the short amount of time between now and June, well, I envision that whatever process is decided, the JCC or the jurisdictions themselves, and looking at possible reductions at the same time in additional meetings. On this list, I didn't intend for this to mean you only have two meetings in February. This is up to the board. It might be 10 meetings in February. That we go through all of the expenses, because these numbers will change. And as we scrub through them, whatever the final number is, then you go back and you have a list of recommendations. If it's this amount, what will go out? And then you match the two up.
But see, here's the bottom line for us. Is ought we not to have a meeting on the expenses of the authority without consideration of possible service cuts or anything else? Just
yes.
Let's have a meeting on the expense budget, the operational expense budget.
Yes.
And I think that I would prefer to have that meeting before any service reductions are even presented, so that we can turn to the service reductions after we're absolutely satisfied that this is the budget in terms of the operations that we feel comfortable with. Because we don't have that right now. You have presented a budget that you're comfortable with, and I appreciate having been briefed on this, but we as a board have not had the opportunity to really delve into all of that. That's what I'm suggesting.
I think that's an issue that we are going to, as a board, have to explore, because we control requesting meetings and when we want them.
Right.
Subjects will be there. But
I'm yes. I'm looking at page 24 of the PowerPoint. I think it's my opinion. In my opinion, we should schedule an expense budget meeting.
I want to give Ms.
Okay. I think it's 28.
Are you willing to let me go to Zimmerman? Okay. Mr. Zimmerman and Ms. Hutchins.
Important points for us.
Right.
I think you made some very important points about the fact, number one, this is a magnitude of service reduction being contemplated, unlike anything ever, certainly without many of us have served here. Number two, it's coming at a time when demand for our services is going up. So, you know, your logic makes no sense at all, except that it's imposed on us by circumstances we may not be able to control. So they have to be contemplated. Whether they are done and how they are done is a different question. What we're discussing is by what process should they be collectively contemplated. And you know, the one part that I'm not sure I agree, I definitely agree that we want to make sure we've done absolutely everything else we can to reduce expenses. And I agree that this body should be discussing that first thing in the process. But because there are multiple levels that have to be involved in the conversation, they have to be done in effect concurrently. And I think the service part of it needs to get out there as fast as possible. Although I would characterize it differently. I'm not going to say we're looking for people for recommendations and cuts. The recommendation I know from my jurisdiction would be no cuts. Are you kidding? We recommend you increase service. We have increasing demand. Why would we want to go putting people into cars? But the question we need to ask is, if we were compelled to cut such service, in priority terms, what are the parts that would be least painful? I mean, this is, what do we amputate? Nobody wants to do it, but we have to have some strategy for it. And in a case in which it looks very likely, that's what we're going to wind up doing in the end, unless somebody comes up with more money between now and this work. And we need a rational process for figuring that out. The reason the JCC is appropriate, we, of course, will all get jurisdictional recommendations. We will all, you know, we all work directly with the jurisdiction. But the services that are really going to be on the line, most of which are bus services, cross jurisdictions. And so there's no way to decide those kinds of things, even if we prioritize. Put it the other way. What are the things you'd say don't cut no matter what? You've got to have a conversation across jurisdictional lines. I think we need the JCC having that conversation, recognizing that we're also going to hear from the public, we're going to hear from the Writers Council, we have a lot of debate, we're going to beg for money everywhere we can find it. We'll consider everything else before we make any cuts. But I think the public needs to know, if we don't come up with money, what is it that's on the line here? And I think the sooner we get to working on what that picture is, the better it'll be. It won't be pleasant, but there's no way this is pleasant. And I want people who are going to be affected by it to be engaged as early as possible.
Ms.
Ms. Hutchins?
I just wanted to follow on with that, with the process piece, because there seems to be a view that we are just going to go through meetings. I'm hoping we're talking about serious budget work meetings.
Yes.
Separate from other committee meetings that would give us the time to go through the expense side of the budget with the cuts that may be proposed given the situation where we are. I don't think that I'm thinking of this as a day that we're going to sit down and look at someone's cuts and then be asked to make decisions. So that was one.
What I think I'm hearing is that the members of the board do want to spend some more time in additional meetings, which we're going to have to schedule, and I don't think we're going to schedule right here, right now. But we are going to take a look at those expenses in far more detail so that we can feel that before we propose to the people of this region that we're going to cut any service, we really feel that that is something that we absolutely have to do. And we're also going to have to deal with the issue of if we're going to cut particularly bus services, whose ox gets gored? Who is it out here that, you know, how much does each jurisdiction have to contribute to that process? And the JCC is probably a good forum for discussion, but not for decision or recommendation. And I think that's where we're coming out. That's a place where they can vet these issues, they can talk about them, they can propose things, but in the end, we are going to have to make those decisions. And that's what we want to have happen. And clearly, every jurisdiction is going to have to be closely involved in those discussions to assure that the various points of view that each of us has relative to what Mr. Zimmerman said. This is a service that absolutely cannot be cut. I don't care how productive or non-productive it is. It goes to a hospital, and we're not going to cut it. Those kinds of issues have got to be brought out. So, Mr. McKay.
I'm in full agreement with what you just said and the principal point that Mr. Graham brought up about the JCC. I think it's appropriate to send it there, but I do have some concerns about the direction that's going to be given to them and what we're actually asking for them in terms of a product. And I don't think that necessarily they're going to get there. But I do think, and I want to emphasize this because I think it's important, the benefit of going to the JCC is that each of our jurisdictions understands the other cuts in transportation services that our jurisdictions are considering. And I don't think that any decisions that Metro makes or that we make can happen in a vacuum, because there are other cuts to specifically public transportation services in our jurisdictions that are being made. And I would think that when we're looking at service cuts at Metro, we obviously want to know what those are in the jurisdiction so that we can measure what's happening out there on the street. Because clearly there are some areas where we have some duplicated service that maybe this process will help us eliminate, but we need to understand what the jurisdictions are doing themselves, and I think the JCC is an appropriate place for that. But I don't have any visions of them coming to us with a product that they've all agreed to that we can just bless and endorse. I think ultimately it's going to have to be our decision.
I would balance our comment with the note that the general manager made earlier, and that is, if in fact we want any service cuts to have a substantial effect on this budget, they have to occur either in July or very early in the next fiscal year, which does limit the amount of time we have to make all of these decisions. And there's a public hearing process that has got to go on. So we need to look first at the budget and then at what possible things we might want to do relative to service. And let's also note there's a proposal here for a very, very substantial reduction in staffing, which will have effects just as well as service changes. So we need to look at all of those, try and balance those, and then come up with some policy decisions, which is what our responsibility as a board is. And we're going to really need to deal with all of those things. Can we allow?
Okay. I don't think this was made clearly enough. The physician cuts, the FTE cuts, how many of those physicians, there's about 600 or 700, is that what you're supposed to
call? 800.
800. And globally, what percentage are they?
Globally, there are approximately 7% of the workforce of the administrative staff, I believe, is 8%.
I'm sorry?
The vacancies? I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. I apologize.
Of the 800, how many are vacant?
Of the 313, approximately, let me do the math here real quick in my mind. Just slightly over 50%.
Are vacant.
About the 891 or?
The 300, it's
somewhere we saw.
It's slightly over 50% because we've been not filling those positions. The other 578, it's under 50% filled because, again, we anticipated this and we've just been letting attrition take its place.
So for both, it's about 50%?
Yes.
So that's actual people out the door as well as other jobs that we would otherwise have needed somebody to do that now somebody else has got to pick up and it's going to be difficult to do. So those are significant.
And it's happening today because when I didn't wait until this meeting to start taking actions. I've already began to take certain actions, and additional actions have to take place on the 1st of February. But net service related.
Are we at a position where we may allow the general manager to move forward on the capital program discussion? Yes? Okay.
Thank you. Next page. I lost my place in my notes, so I just give me a moment, please, to go back to those. Again, the capital budget is funded by a multi-year agreement called Metro Matters. This year's budget will be $478 million, and it's the last year of the Metro Matters funding commitment. Again, all the jurisdictional contributions are on budget and on schedule. And as we look at the overview of the agreement, the total planned expenditures under Metro Matters will be $2.7 billion, which has been dedicated to infrastructure renewal, the purchase of ACAR trains and new buses. Also, there is additional $500 million, $0.5 million estimated cost of funding for total program cost of 3.2. I'd like to emphasize again that this amount for the FY10 budget is a third less than the amount we had in 09, and it's at a time that we need additional capital funding. But there again, we're waiting for the infrastructure renewal program or other programs to provide capital fundings for vehicles as well as infrastructure renewal. Any security budgets or projects will be budgeted once federal funds, if they become available. For FY 2011 and beyond, I'm bringing it up because in this year we're going to have to do a lot of work on this. We've completed the capital needs inventory, and we're still working on that, and then we will be bringing that back to the board for issues of prioritization and determining what's in that. We're working on a financial strategy that's under development for the long-range financial stability of the organization. And, you know, we're going to begin the discussions with the regions at a very tough time. What are we going to be doing in the future from a capital standpoint? But that's going forward. But looking at the FY10 again, the issue becomes we will budget the $400-some-odd million for capital expenditures. And so that is the presentation. There are many steps to go through before we come to the date of developing the budget in June. A lot of comments have been stated today. We will look at every expenditure this agency makes, and these numbers will change, and I agree. I will have additional multiple expense meetings with my staff and departments, and I expect to be held my feet to be held to the fire by this board on every dollar that we spend before we make any reductions in any services that we operate. But having said that, I can't pull the rabbit out of the hat. The reality of the economic conditions in this country today is forcing us into this situation. This isn't something because of bad decisions of this board or this staff. This is something beyond the control of all of us. And we are going to have to confront it, we're going to have to deal with it, and hopefully that the impact will be as minimal as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Cato. Yes, sir, Mr. Zimmerman.
The most important point that Mr. Cato made here, what's the capital budget for the fiscal year we're currently in?
$613 million.
$613 million. Your proposal, the available funds you have for that, $478 million, is it's almost $150 million below what we got for the current year.
Yes.
third cut in our capital budget at a time when our whole point has been we need to spend probably twice as much on capital as we haven't spent before we need to get the funding for that. The available resources to us now just fell adequately. That, you know, that reflects the fact that we went to Metro Matters to do what we could with no help, understanding that we had a certain number of years to find other help before it was going to start really declining. And that's where we're at now. And so, you know, people need to understand that this is, most of what we're talking about is bad news for the coming year. This is bad news for out years. This is the kind of thing that will have an impact 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. People will be saying, how come you didn't anticipate, or whoever our successors are here, how come you didn't anticipate this? Well, that's why you need money now to be able to have it then.
On that note, Mr. Chairman, perhaps we can skip over the next information item, the monthly report on, unless there's something critical you have to tell us.
No? Just one item, actually, that, you know, given the year-to-date financials in November coming in, we are on track to getting cost efficiencies of the $9 million that's being forecasted. So okay. That's what we're recommending.
And let's move on to one of those areas in which we might get some additional funding, which is the endorsement of the economic stimulus project list. Cato?
Just looking for my staff on that. We're just a little bit out of sync because we skipped over one of the items, but it's covered.
Good morning.
Take a minute for the computer to bring it up to the screen.
Is Mr. Monomy making this?
Yes, Mr. Monomy is making the presentation.
Why don't we just move ahead if you're ready?
We desperately need money. This is the request for the money.
Okay.
All right.
We desperately need money. This is a request for it.
Okay, are we finished with the presentation?
Okay, today's good morning and thank you. The presentation this morning is just to speak to a request to have the board endorse a list of projects, categories for purpose of seeking funding from potential federal economic stimulus package, and authorize the general manager to communicate these needs in this list, apply for the grants, to receive the grants, and as may be warranted for funding, and then advancing them in the endorsed categories. And just as a quick overview, as everyone knows, a lot of talk in the current, well, the President-elect's administration's talk about an economic stimulus bill focused primarily on infrastructure. And it's our understanding that this bill is to be passed in mid-February, or later. The time frame is kind of uncertain, but we expect the majority of the projects will be focused on transit. We are not far enough along in the process to know when and frankly how the money will be made available to the transit properties, but it's the majority of the conversation is that it will be coming through the existing federal formulas for funding. And so what we have done and what we would like to do is to move forward on in November 2008, we did present to the board and to the general public and other transit associations a list of needs, $530 million of capital needs that are ready to be implemented in 90 days. They are eligible for federal funding, and they are currently unfunded. This work and this list came from the capital needs inventory that we did, that we worked on and presented to the board earlier last year. So essentially, we're taking the work we've already done. We've reprioritized and packaged those projects and put them into this list. As you'll see from the pie chart on the left there, the categories for the projects: vehicles, passenger facilities, maintenance equipment, IT, maintenance facilities, security and safety, and operational systems. The full gamut of all the needs that we have for the system to maintain the infrastructure that we do have. And that's essentially it. We need this money. This is needs for the system that we've had outstanding for many, many years. We would like to request the board's endorsement of the project categories that we've put together and authorize us to move forward in responding to the specifics of the legislation and then pursuing those grants when they're made available.
May I just get a clarification there? What you just said is appears to be slightly different from what it is you're requesting authority for. And the key in my mind is the two words, and advancing projects. If you take those two words out, what you're really looking for is authority to, we endorse the list and we say this is a good list. This is something we think you should be pursuing with the federal government. You should go after all of the money in every way you possibly can and take the actions warranted to make sure that we get that funding, apply for grants, whatever else is there. But advancing projects makes it sound like you're going to do the whole project and we'll never even see it again.
Let me do a point of clarification on that. There might be a situation where the monies are released because the whole point of the package is you have to begin the process in 90 days. That I'm asking for authorization under the categories to begin the process, because normally you have to come to the board before you begin the process, and then whatever meeting there is after that to come back to the board to communicate what's done. The board can stop the process then, but we haven't lost that period of time after the funds have been awarded. But I can move ahead to expedite the award of a contract, but ultimately it has to come back to the board for approval.
So you're saying you want the authority to initiate contracts but not award?
I want, you know, and I don't know the details of how it's going to work at the moment because this is still up in the air, but I want the abilities to get the monies and spend them and get people working and get projects done.
The clarification that I think I'm looking for is that these are projects that would, if given the money today, we're ready to start. Is that where we
are? They can be done in 90 days. We can start in 90 days.
Once we know we have funding from a stimulus package, we are saying, yes, let's start that. And we need not to grant a long process of going through an authorization then,
I understand where Mr. Benjamin,
contract.
Yeah, it's coming from. He doesn't want to give all the authority from the board to me to do any contract I want to do. It's just for me to start that process, get it going. I have to bring it back to the board. But all that time hasn't been spent in process.
So you would come back to the board as quickly as possible. One of the issues that almost certainly is going to happen is there are going to be some priority decisions that have to be made. Do we buy buses or do we do something for rail cars? Because the money probably isn't going to come through with those kinds of labels. And it seems to me that's the point where the board wants to get involved again and not just say, oh, we sat back and we went out and bought a bunch of buses and, gee, we wanted rail cars instead.
Well, I think I will have discussions with this board, either in formal meetings, individuals, and I've gotten direction from you before on priorities. I'm not going to go out and buy something. I'm not going to buy staff vehicles, for an example, or things like that. But, yeah, we can have those discussions, but I just don't want to miss getting funding because of the process.
And I think we're okay on getting funding. It's how you spend the funding that we probably want to have some input in before we go too far.
Okay.
Mr. Lennon.
Yeah, I think the effort here is to make sure that we don't have an impediment that we have in our process that prohibits us from taking advantage of the opportunity that might come before us. And if it's the stimulus package, effort here is to get money in the ground, get it moving, and then we don't have a process within our house that creates a problem for us to access those dollars because of that process. And I think the general manager basically said, give me the opportunity to initiate so I can be consistent with what the federal government may require in order for us to receive those dollars. And I don't think we as a board want to be stopping that from occurring. At the same token, he's saying, however, I will consult with you to make sure that the interest that you have in how we spend and where we spend is met. And I think we should be able to allow him to be able to do that.
Mr. Graham and then Mr. Zimmerman.
I will move the recommendation.
Second.
Do you have any other comments? Mr. Zimmerman.
The comment I have is second with Chalinton saying. I'm confident that if we get an award for something, the general manager is going to consult for us. What's going to do about it? My number one concern is that we actually have a shot at getting it. We don't have an impediment. That's saying not only that there isn't anything that would inhibit us from getting the money, but also that we can demonstrate that people are asking that we be ready to move, which I think is probably the most important factor.
Mr. Graham?
Yeah, I do have one question. I recognize that this is all capital funding.
Yes.
But we do have a major unfunded federal mandate in Metro Access. And I don't know whether there might be an opportunity. There may not be any opportunity whatsoever, but there might be an opportunity to advance that as an issue when all of this is being discussed. We're in the same boat with everybody else.
And around the country on that.
And there may be aspects, there may be more than aspects of Metro Access where we could get some federal support. They federally directed this. We might have wanted to do it on our own, I know, but that isn't the way it worked. And so if we could just keep that in mind.
I would have all staff to check.
Are there any other comments on this? If not, those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? This passes. And, well, we have one more item. It's a critical item. We have the audit report, which we do have to accept.
I move the audit is complete.
Well, it's at least let them come up and sit down. But I think they have.
It's so very cold in this area.
Okay, Ms. Liu, clearly this is a point where we would probably be ready to move to accept the materials that you are putting before us, unless you feel that there are some specific points you need to make or you need to bring to the board's attention. Are there?
No, they're not.
Okay, so if we can move ahead
yes.
and just approve this at this
yes.
point. We have a resolution in blue that you are moving.
Yes, I'm moving there.
Okay. Mr. Graham, would you know which one you're moving? It's this one.
I move it.
Okay. who was the second? Okay. We're reviewing, this is moving the review and acceptance of the fiscal 2008 external audit deliverables. Any comments or questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That is approved.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I apologize, but I just really wanted to take this opportunity to introduce the authority's new controller, who has been here for the last 2 months, Stephanie Audette, and she came from the district government as well as she was the prior controller of Amtrak. So she helped this process quite a bit with Helen. So.
Welcome, Stephanie. We're very pleased that you're here and that you can work with the auditor next year and doing this audit. Do we have any other items? Okay. If not, this meeting is concluded.